Hello and welcome to the Awaken to Wholeness Summit. My name is Val Salidkar. Today we are diving deep into the heart with two extraordinary voices of divine connection, Deva Pramal and Mitten. Flame carriers of a 5,000-year-old tradition, Deva Pramal and Mitten are at the forefront of the burgeoning worldwide chant phenomenon, merging ancient mantras of India and Tibet with contemporary musical settings. Their debut album, The Essence, introduced a unique musical genre. The album rocked to the top of world and new age charts, where it still remains. Since the release of The Essence, Deva and Mitten have tapped into an apparently unending stream of uplifting and inspirational music, with over 17 albums released. They grace festivals, concert halls, rock venues, and cathedrals around the planet. And I can tell you, they are absolutely divine. In the words of Eckhart Tolle, pure magic. Deva, Mitten, it's such an honor to have you with us. Thank you. You've both devoted your life to the sacred power of mantra, which is what we're going to dive into today. And I've been blessed to experience you several times here in South Florida, where I live. And it is just unlike anything. You know, it's the chanting, the music, the silence. It's a prayer. You know, I would say I don't think I've ever seen you performing. It's more of an invitation for all of us to come together and have a spiritual experience that transcends story. Does that feel like what you're offering? Because that's what I feel like I receive that whenever I am blessed with you.
Totally what it is. And it's really flowering of what we received on our spiritual journey with our guru in India, in the ashram. And so it's a kind of an extension of that space that is shared there, that we received there. And now we somehow are blessed to have found a way to share that in theaters and in rock arenas or in clubs. So we don't play so much in clubs, but we have done, and somehow to tap into that feeling in the world, you know, which is really the most important thing.
And most unexpectedly too, you know, we never really look for this. We just feel really literally as if we're being carried on the wings of these mantras. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing for us that makes the mantras so important is that, well, they're not descriptive sounds. They're actually energetic sounds. Sanskrit is an energetic language. So we're actually connecting with a river of sound as we chant. And the beauty for me with the mantras is that they are always available, but it's up to us whether we step towards them or not. It's not that they're not there. The mantras exist as an invisible spiritual entity, and they are alive. But we have to commit, we have to do something to move towards them. And that's where the beauty is. It's actually, it creates a situation where you want to say, yes, I want to do this because I want to feel more richness in my life. I want to feel better. And so on a scientific level, this is where it's possible. You make a step, you actually commit to a mantra practice, and you commit to it as a scientist. You actually say, I will chant this mantra 21 days, and then I will see what happens. Mm. And the mantra is the mantra that resonates with your personal outlook at that particular time in your life. So you actually, yeah, so there's a situation in your life and you feel like I can get help, with sound. It's a sound healing phenomenon. So you're into the realm of sound. And that's where the power is. And when you refine sound, which is what the mantras have done, then you are tapping into a very powerful and strong energy, benevolent, healing.
Absolutely. I absolutely feel that. And it really is an invitation, like you're saying, to make yourself available, to allow yourself to be present to the musical medicine of it, the way that it works in us. And what is the history of mantra? I mean, we have a general association, but what is the history of that sound? Like, how do they come to learn that or experience that originally?
I think we could even call it channeling, you know. We could just imagine that in these ancient times, like thousands of years ago, that they're called the rishis, the seers, that they would be sitting in meditation and actually receive those sounds that they realized had certain effects on them, and that they, you know, spoke to even certain body parts, or those sounds, they created a connection to different energetic qualities. And it's like they were hearing these sounds, and then they found a way to make these sounds themselves with a human voice, you know. So it's really, that's why we always emphasize their words. It's not a language as we're used to now, where everything just points to something else, you know, like the word table points to something else, like a table, but it's not it, you know. And in Sanskrit, in this energetic language that they received, they actually got the sound vibration of the actual quality. So you don't have to translate it, basically. That's it, you know. It is it.
Yes.
And also, you know, the thing that is that they not only expressed it audibly, they also refined it, and that's your first mantra. And then from there they started to put different sounds together, and there you have your first mantra. They even got to a level of realizing how many cycles you need to actually connect with the sound. How many cycles do you have to chant this to actually feel it and to experience it? And, you know, 108.
I mean, it's the start, 108. There's, you know, the 250,000, 500,000, you know, like it's but
that's hard. Yeah.
I mean, basically, the thing with the repetition, I feel it's the human mind likes to have it all kind of, you know, ordered, at least mine does. And so we like, okay, we do 108 times, then we feel like we've got like one block down or something. There is a connection to the energy the energy meridians in the body, this the nadis, and there's 108 of them. So when we chant it 108 times, we can feel these energetic arteries in the body with this mantra. So that's one of the explanations, but 108 is a very auspicious number in many lands. Right. But with a repetition, basically, it just points us to thing that you are meant to repeat it, you know. And the repetition is a cleansing of the mind, because if you just say it once, and the next time, then after that, your mind spaces out to past, present, past or future. But if we stay with the repetition, we have something for the mind to stay in the moment with. Mm-hmm. And also to create this, I mean, that's the main reason, to create a beneficial flow of thought, you know, like thoughts and sounds and our minds are uplifting and are healing. So that's where repetition comes in. It's like to mold it's like a pebble, you know, that gets washed over by the water. It gets smooth, you know. It's a constant washing over by the wave, very gently, but it's
a beautiful
constant
analogy. Yes.
So that's why we stay with the repetition as much as we remember, because we forget anyway.
Absolutely, and I think that's too why it brings us beyond the story, beyond, you know, the ideas, the thoughts, because as you keep going deeper and deeper and deeper, everything fades away, and there's only moment, the sound, you know, such an incredible experience.
And for me, actually, the most important part or the kind of climax of mantra is when it does come to silence. And that's, and I feel that's, for me, that's really the reason why we chant, is to experience that silence where there's no more nothing, like you just said, but more mantra come to. And there is just a very vibrant, ecstatic silence, full of life and full of, joy, really, bliss.
Absolutely. And there's nothing too, like when the music is building and building and you're ecstatic in it, feeling that and chanting it in your whole body and everything's vibrating. And then all of a sudden it's like that last note just fades. And then there is that ecstatic silence that is deeper than anything. I mean, I could say maybe I have felt that like in the misty mountains, where you're just, the cool wind is blowing and you're listening deeply to the sounds of the birds. And then there's just this silence that's inside of everything, like that brings us there into that space. It's so powerful. It's so powerful for anybody who hasn't ever experienced it. Like, how do you describe it? You have to feel it, you almost can't. I'm sure there's some poetry that could wrap around that, but the feeling of it is something else.
You can sing it. That's the purpose of music. Music expresses this space that we're talking about. Music opens the door. Mantras open the door to this space. That's the point. That's what takes our events beyond a concert, because we are moving towards silence. We're not moving towards excitement. So we're in a totally different realm by the end of the evening. And then you can do that. But music is easily abused, It's music is easily abused and used for different reasons. For obvious ones, financial and ambition and everything like that, it gets tied in with music. But pure music is simply a key to this space that we are hanging out in and talking to each other about. And your listeners obviously know this space also, because that's why would we be tuning in? So we're connected on that level. And if we live in there, the trick is to continue to live in this space that we are accessing right now. And that's why David was saying the mantras actually keep us focused in here, so that we can go about our business and go about our relationships with our friends and our family, and with compassion, and forgiveness. That's what it's all about.
And it's such an amazing, powerful tool, gift that we have as a means to come back into ourselves, to come home into ourselves, especially with the intensity and the chaos of this time, that so many of us are holding inside of us, and it pulls us away. We get caught up in the story. We get caught up in the argument of it. We get caught up in the thoughts of it. And it really takes us out of that space, that silence, that space of home, the music brings us back to.
It's a great example for us, actually, of duality that's happening. Rather than it be looked on as something terrible, if we look on it as a great example for us, all of us, it's a gift. It becomes a gift for our own individual journey, our own individual understanding of life, because we're never going to make the world right, and there's obviously always going to be polarity. So our challenge is to be balanced in the middle of that polarity. What we see is obvious separation. So our quest in this life is to be balanced. And these elections and these politicians, they just give us a very clear understanding of how we can be balanced and not to focus on the external, because we're never going to make that right. It's never going to be right.
No, never going to be right for everybody.
Right. Well, the one thing that we can work on is our internal, to pass through whatever's happening externally, right? That's the heart of it. When we keep ourselves connected in this way, then we can move through the sacred movement, with sacred action, and participate however we feel called to participate. but we're always okay. You know, we're always in that space of peace, even if we're in the deep emotion of it, even if we're feeling the sadness or discomfort of the time, because I think it is important to honor that in us as well. But we can hold all of it when the base of it is that love.
Do you? I heard the saying, I don't, it goes something like, you can't cover the whole world with leather, but you can wear leather shoes, you know? It's not vegan, this quote, but we can find a vegan way to say it. But anyway. that's it, you know, we cannot make the world a peaceful place, but we can be the peace that we carry everywhere, and we can see everything through peaceful eyes, you know, because we see the world through our eyes. So it's that thing we carry it within, we don't look for it from the outside.
And that reality doesn't come cheap. You know, it's not something that you can just, you know, you that's why I say that it needs a commitment. We all need to commit. It's easy to look on the outside and blame this one or that. That's what we will do forever.
To blame.
Yeah, it does. But you know what we're all facing is the challenge. We're facing the challenge, and that's the gift. But it makes it very clear that it's only about our internal world. That's where peace begins, and that's all we can share. We can't possibly hope for anything else. So if we're not ready to take the challenge, then we'll be fixed on the external, and there's not enough time left. We really need, and it's obvious as you go in, we travel around the world. It's not, our conversation is not unusual anymore. This conversation we're having, it's all through the world, and you know we're in Russia. And we can find the most beautiful vegan restaurant there. That didn't happen before. Or, you know, all over the people now, you know, there's a big, big tribe that was born in the 60s and has grown, the generations have grown, and we're living, it's all growing. So, of course, there's more reference points now.
Of course, of course. And I wonder, I mean, it feels like things have become more and more intense. There's a lot of things happening on a global scale right now. And I wonder, as you're traveling and sharing this beautiful gift, has anything shifted in the way that you're holding space or in what you're receiving from people maybe after a concert? Is anything different in the way people are receiving the mantras?
From when we began?
Yeah, well, and maybe especially in the last couple of years.
No, from when we began, we were chanting mantras back then was weird. And now we're not weird anymore. We have thousands of people come because we all feel it, you know. But,
yeah.
But the growth in awareness and self-reflection is so tangible.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious all over.
Yeah, it's like the more that these things are happening in our world, the more we know that we need this. Like intuitively, we're just, it's like a magnet calling us, you know, pulling us towards that experience, that feeling.
And it's global. And I mean, I know I say this often because it's amazing, but when we play our annual concerts in Moscow, the 6,000 people come to chant with us and sit in silence with us. You know, that's in Russia. You know,
so 6,000 people sitting together, chanting, yeah. Holding that space of silence.
It's in a rock stadium, and it's done for David to hear David sing.
Yeah.
And we just together and chant. And for me, I always look out on that concert and say, this must be historic, you know, because never in the history of this country or this city as people gathered in such numbers to chant Sanskrit mantras and sit together in silence. Because it's just not happening ever before. So there is, you can feel there's a like Leonard Cohen says, you know that thing about the crack where the light gets in?
That's right.
Yeah, well, that's
there's loads of cracks now. So.
Well, it's getting bigger
lots
and bigger.
Lots of light coming in. The darker the light, yeah, the darker the lighter. It's all happening simultaneously, it feels like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so incredible. And I know you guys, you know, you bring your music everywhere. You also, I've read that you brought your music to San Quentin and other prisons and places like that. And what is that? What was that experience like? Since this is the conversation, what was that like?
Actually, I left very uplifted from San Quentin. I felt such a sharing of joy and love and the realness and also the gratitude from the men that we had come and that, I mean, just the eyes when I looked out into those who had come to join us, there was only such loving eyes and real also because they all had come to some understanding of course, humility, humbleness, forgiving themselves, forgiving each other. I don't know, it was very, 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 very strong. And especially also, you know, they sang, they cried, they participated, some more, some less. And afterwards, almost one by one came to say hello and to...
And to share their stories. You know, some of their stories were so horrific and so intense, what they'd done. You know, and they had to live, they're like monks. There's nowhere for them to go. So they have to find a way to forgive themselves. And so, you know, that's very... But I think the thing for me that
because we're talking about what they said, one guy said, I've been here for 25 years, but tonight I'm free. Yeah. And the other guy said, I haven't been high for 19 years, but tonight I'm high. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It was a high experience. It was a high experience, and of course, as we played in the chapel there, and as the word got out, there more and more and more of the guys came. So in the end, it was really full on. Some folk called out to us, saying, "You know, you know any reggae? You know." And, so for sure we did, and so we started to play some reggae, you know. And they started dancing, and for that one moment when there was one guy started to dance and they all clapped him, and they were it was just, I don't know, it was a joyful, there was a moment of joy in that prison. There was a communal joy, and that touched all of us, you know. So, because we know, okay, we know the mantras can, you know, they can touch us in our lives, but what about taking them to intense places? You know, what do they do then?
Yes.
You know, that's what we, you know, that's why we go to Brussels just after that thing, or Paris, or to Kiev in the Ukraine. We take the mantras to these places, and you know, there's again a theater full of people who come and sing and sit in silence, and all these. Israel too, you know, and we went and played in this temple that brought Palestinian and Israeli people together to share and to chant and to share their culture, you know.
Yes.
That's, you know, it's good. It's a good measure to take the mantras into, you know, because Dava and I have very intense lives, you know, so, you know, it's just good to share what we've stumbled upon, and it by the grace of Dava's father, because it was Dava's father who gave her the Gayatri mantra at birth,
mm-hmm.
and gave her the and through the pregnancy, and chanted it all through her childhood. You know, so the Gayatri mantra, which is the most powerful set of sounds known to humanity. The most healing, generous, benevolent collection of sounds he gave to his daughter from day one. You know,
so,
yeah, So, you know, so yeah. So, you know, take
So you were born into this experience already, before you were even born. Was there a moment when it became yours, let's say, versus something that your parents had you do, but where you really felt like this belongs to me now? Like, was there a moment that shifted for you? Because I know what it's like when we're children, our parents have us do a certain thing, and it becomes just the thing we do at home. What was that experience like? Or was that from the beginning, or was there a moment where it really like became yours?
Yeah, it was exactly like that. It was I had to basically let it go for many, many years, and then it came back when I was actually only 27 or something. That's when it came back from an unexpected source. Mm. You know, like I just heard it, the guy actually being sung and chanted, and then it just was like a transmission or like a kind of a pivotal moment, because it was like, wow, I remember this. This is so familiar to me. And then the realization that when I would sing and chant it, my voice had changed, and it was I was very shy to sing before. And when I sang the mantra, suddenly there was no shyness, and it was like, wow, this is home. This is so easy. This is so natural. So yes. Yeah, it took me a little while. But, you know, I just never left meditation and the spiritual path. I just didn't have mantras on my spiritual path for a while, because I chanted the Gayatri mantra maybe, I don't know, till I was 9, 10 or 11, I can't really remember. And then I found my guru Osho, who was an Indian but not traditional, so mantras were not part of his path. So, and amazingly, he didn't even have a path. You know, he just gave us like the freedom to follow our own inner voice and to, you know.
Yeah, so, I know a little bit about Osho, not nearly as much as I'm sure you've lived, but yeah.
But he was very like untraditional, so that he didn't emphasize any worth in following tradition. So mantras were even really not part of ashram life. And then, yeah, when I was 27, it's like, wow, this is it.
She came to me and she said, I've just heard the Gayatri. And I said, what's the Gayatri? I didn't even know what it was. And then she told me, yeah, this is the mantra that I was born to, and then I chanted all through my younger years. So we started to put music to it to find a way that we could, because when she sang it, she was obviously channeling. And Deva is not esoteric in that way, really, but it was just so obvious that this energy and power was coming through her through her voice. So it was just for me, it was a gift to be able to help this voice and this energy to be seen. So my part in playing the music and putting the music together that could support this was an amazing, unexpected journey. But we'd been, in a way, we'd been trained. It's not quite the right word, but we'd had that experience, because in the ashram, the music was only used to create a silent space. You know, it was always used to accompany meditation. And the evening meditations when Osho would come out, even if it was high energy celebration music, which it often was, it always led us to that moment you were just talking about and you were expressing earlier, where it was just silence. So even with the joy and the celebration and the full-on energy of a band and everyone singing, to just being in silence at the end of that and holding that energy instead of spilling it out by screaming and yelling and clapping or whatever, by holding that energy, you become transformed. It just, the whole body starts to vibrate, the energy moves up your spine, and simple. Hello, you know, this is, This is something that traditions have talked about and helped us to move towards, you know. And in our case, we could reach that space playing, you know, reggae or samba or rock. You know, we were very eclectic musicians from all over the world in the ashram. But the whole point was silence, and not a silence that's tense. Not a silence of the graveyard. This is, we're talking about an ecstatic silence, which is vibrating, you know, that you don't want to talk, you don't want to open your eyes, you just want to absorb it and be part of it, you know, and relinquish your ego into it, you know.
Absolutely. I was blessed to have a partner, and we actually played together. And we sang music and mantra music for years. And there would be times when we would just be the two of us, you know, at home playing, and we would finish that, you know, that last note, right, that I was saying before. And there was this overwhelming experience of love. There was just this, I can't, you know, where you're just like, you almost want to laugh, you want to cry, you don't know. You know, once that moment, it's just like, it's everything. It's just everything in that moment. And I can only imagine how your music together has played a part in deepening your love every moment, every breath, every note. How has that been for the two of you as beloveds with your music?
Yeah. Shall we play the Gayatri?
There it is. Our world is longing for connection. longing for connection, longing to feel that deeply within ourselves, you know, connecting to each other, connecting to that great mystery. And this is such a powerful way. Mantra, your music and voices, everything that channels through you, such a powerful way for us to remember who we really are. Thank you. So beautiful.
The beautiful thing is, Val, is that we all have our gifts to share, right? All of us, every single one of us. And for us, it's manifested in this way. So it's, and to share it is our joy and our, you know, because it's like anything in life, if you don't share what you have, what's the point to having, you know? But we all have our gifts, and we are grateful for our friends to be able to receive our gifts and for us to be able to share them. Yeah. So that's our way, and it's I think that's anyway. Difficult to speak after the gayatri.
But that's what wants to come through, and that's such a beautiful reminder for all of us, you know, that to live a meaningful life is to live the life we're meant to live. And to do that, we really need to listen to what's alive inside of us. And, you know, you experienced that through the Gayatri Mantra and how that reminded you of how your path needed to unfold. And in hearing that, your response was to unfold with her, and together you found your gift that you share. How beautiful that is. I think a lot of us move through life so fast that we don't take time to listen to what wants to come through. And so again, mantra is an amazing way to allow us to listen, because what can you do in silence?
You know, Osho used to say, you know, my main thing is to just to get you to slow down.
Yes.
And really, you know, that's such a big part of the mantras and the music. It's just slow down for a moment.
It's the being and the doing, you know, and in our world, we think we always need to be doing, and we're trying to do so much and fill it all in. You have 5 extra minutes. Well, then let me do something then, you know. I definitely find myself in that space, and I have to remind myself to just be. I have a 2-year-old, and sometimes just being is a little more challenging, more than it used to be, at least at the moment. So it feels that much more crucial to provide time, to make time for ourselves. To simply be.
I really like to share also one of my 10 songs, because it's really, all what we share has come out of the music that Miten's been playing all his life, and the music that he's created for the ashram meditations, and the songs that came out of that feeling. And I always feel they really share the space of the mantras in an English, in an understandable English way. So I would love to share one of his songs.
Yeah.
A little reluctant.
No, I'm not reluctant. I just
And he just put out an album with the songs Temple of Midnight, which I talk in love.
Beautiful.
If I am not, oh, that's what it is. No, I have to do it.
I don't hold a guitar. I can hear you hold it. that's what we, in those, we've been together since I'm 20, and in those years before we rediscovered the mantras, that's how we travel. We would share the 10 songs, we would share the chants that we've been singing in the ashram, like some of that were really well known now, like So Much Magnificence, Hallelujah, or Fly High. So that was almost like a basis for our musical togetherness. And then mantras were like the flowering or the continuation of our journey together. And then, yeah, so it's very, very dear to me, very. I just love them.
And with 17 albums, I mean, you guys have created so much over the years and many collaborations, really beautiful collaborations as well. Is that right? 17?
21, actually.
Oh, 21 now. This one that we're about to hear from, this song's off one of the new albums, number 21.
But it seems to be a well of creativity, you know. So we just keep going.
If I am not my body, if I am not my mind, if I am not my emotions, who is the one crying? And if I am not the teachings, if I am not the word, if I am only sleeping, John, what was that song that I heard? It was you, you are the answer, you are the golden key. You, you are the music, Jai Gurudev, Guruji, Guruji.
You see, people ask me how come the relationship is so successful. I just tell everyone, I just do what she tells me.
Play the song.
It's a good reminder for all us guys, you know, that there's the feminine energy, the wisdom that comes through the mother, and the Radha, you know, is just so strong and so powerful. One could only, run the world, we would be in such a different place. But unfortunately, it's not like that right now. One day, we hope, you guys will be leading us, because you lead from a totally different place. And we all need that right now in this world. I was just looking at somebody sent me a video of a women's march in Jerusalem, I think, or in Israel, somewhere in Israel. And Palestinian and Israeli women, thousands. So even Palestinian women are also coming, stepping out and saying, hey, we've had enough. So it's the only way. It's got to be from the feminine energy, the sweetness, and the real power.
I think we are seeing that all over now. So many, also just like sisterhood, red tens, like all these women's movements are happening on a powerful level right now. But it's softening, it's softening, it's coming back to the heart. It's that, the feminine energy is not necessarily mean a woman versus man. Like it's an embodiment of that softness and that love. And the song that you just sang, Mitten, was, so flowing and right in the heart of reminding us that we are more than our stories, more than these emotions and these thoughts and this body, and that there's something so much deeper within us. And I think that's a movement of feminine flow, bringing us into that space.
It has to happen. It's an evolution. It has to happen. We're in a transitional place.
Yeah, we are. Well, evolution happens when there's the greatest amount of pressure, where we either change or die, right? So here we are, we're like, how do we move into that next level now? Because the invitation is here. The invitation is here. And what you were saying earlier about all of us, really touching base and connecting with what our gifts are. That's it. It's like, okay, maybe we can't make the world peaceful, but we can create the peace within, and we create the world. So by creating the peace within, maybe there's a chance we can just let that ripple out into the world, and we see that growing, that movement growing. And there becomes this great choice, do we continue on as business as usual, which isn't possible. We can't possibly do that. Or do we come into the heart? Do we make some major choices that bring us into a more compassionate and connected world by honoring our gifts and by living them out?
And the challenge, it doesn't have to be huge, it doesn't have to be impossible, That's the thing with the mantras, you can say, hey, okay, look, I'm going to chant this mantra every night with Deva and my CD player or in my MP3. I'm going to do it for 21 days before I go to sleep every night. That's it. It's so simple. Hey, come on, 10 minutes before you go to sleep to chant a mantra. It's not, it's not that difficult, but, it's a step, and the step is the important part. You step towards the light. We all have our light. Like you say, maybe we're not the president, or maybe we're not this or that, but we all have our light to shine. And that's all we can do, just shine our light, our own individual light. Whatever it is, it's there. Everybody has it. It's not without doubt. That's what keeps us breathing. It's the light that we all carry. Why would we bother? We'd rather be dead. So that light is the key, it's what keeps us alive.
Absolutely. And then we feel it too as we come together, 6,000 people in Russia or 20 people and then a yoga studio, whatever it is, like when we come together, our individual lights just burn so much brighter, and that gives us hope, that gives us the possibility and potential to step forward into a better world.
What it gives us is the moment. That's all we have. Mm-hmm. It's even beyond hope. We just have the moment of light. That's it. That's it. That's it.
Beautiful. Wow. So important. It's so important. I'm so grateful that we can dive into this together and people can receive this conversation. You know, we need to be talking about it. We need to be experiencing it. And I don't know, you know, with everything happening in the world, is there anything else? I mean, that was just beautiful right there. But is there anything else that you'd want to share or say for all of us right now?
I think we've said it.
We sang it and we've said it.
Sang it and you said it. Yeah, you really have. And you really do. And we're also so blessed because you're sharing a couple of gifts with us. So everybody, make sure you click on the links near this video because we're going to get two amazing meditations. You did two 21-day journeys. One was the mantra meditation journey, and the second, the spirit of mantra, 21 days. Mm-hmm. So there is this beautiful meditation that they can experience and each day for 21 days, or at least.
It's really, actually, it's like 42 different mantras that we focused on, and every day is a meditation. It's about 15, 20 minutes long, and it's an introduction from us. It's like an invocation. It's a guided meditation around the particular mantra, and then an experience of that mantra by chanting it, or if they're longer, then also just by listening to it, but mainly chanting. And it's just a fantastic way to dive deeper into the mantras, also to get a taste of different mantras. What do we resonate with? What feels like our mantra? Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to make available the two beginnings of these two journeys. So just to get a taste of the journey. And when we did it online, and 200,000 people participated in it. So it's also translated it into Spanish and into Russian. So if people don't speak English so well, we have it available in Spanish and Russian. So just to do what we can to share the mantras like that.
Beautiful. You are such a blessing to our world. Thank you so much for listening to your calling and inviting us all to do that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Val.
Thank you, Val. Thank you for shining your light on us.
The world needs us right now to just shine, shine, shine. Thank you. Much love.
Thank you.